3, 4. First you have to have a problem. That part isn't hard. The second step is everybody realizing they're like you. They're holding the same card. Step 3 is finding there's a tactic when everyone believes it could be true. That if all the people work collectively, there just might be something we can do and everything can change. Businessmen and TV sets will try hard to make sure it isn't so. You don't have a problem. If you do, it's not the same problem. And if it is, well, there's just nowhere you can go. But that many times, the history is rich, though we easily forget how a meme can take hold and grab you, how it can spread out like a net, and everything can change. They'll say we are lost or we're dreaming, or they'll make a dream for us. They'll try to come up with a good story about why we belong at the back of the bus, about why we belong in this position, about how we don't know what we meant, about how there most certainly isn't any such thing as the 99%, but everything can change.
Good morning. Welcome to Wednesday Talk Radio here on KBOO Community Radio. As always, I'm your host, Paul Rowland. Be with you till the next hour, for the next hour. And today we're talking once again about water bottling and corporate takeovers and privatization of our public and natural resources. And as Ross said, we'll be doing that with Aurora Del Valle and with Orvi Danzuka. And they are on the line waiting. Before we go to them, a few announcements as always. You just heard Dave Rovics, and he will be jamming for rent control at Portland City Hall today, right after this show, 9:30 a.m. to 12 p.m. Go on down, join Dave Rovics and other artists for rent control in the first of many weekly Wednesday morning jams for rent control during Portland City Council's weekly Wednesday morning meeting. Tomorrow, a KBOO-sponsored event, Who Are My People? Sacred Fight in Mojave Desert, a film at the Clinton Street Theater at 7 p.m. tomorrow, depicts how the world's energy firms have met their match in a small group of Native American elders in the hottest desert on the planet. The film takes us behind the scenes of two of the largest solar projects in the world, fast-tracked by U.S. renewable energy policies. This searing documentary film exposes the current and controversial topic of the build-out of large-scale renewable energy in the deserts of the West. Filmmaker Robert Lundahl, who I believe will be there, yes, he will be there, Native elder Pat Brock and friends will host a free-range conversation with audience members, drumming, dancing, and sharing stories. That will be tomorrow, Thursday, at the Clinton Street Theater at 7 p.m. Also tomorrow, 7 to 9 p.m. at Tabor Space, 5441 Southeast Belmont Street, the Kalapuya, their story and use of native plants. Join Jimmy Maffitt, volunteer botanist and naturalist at the Tualatin River and Wapato Lake National Wildlife Refuges, will present the program. And that's about the original inhabitants of the Willamette and Tualatin Valleys. Through their history, lifestyles, and interactions with more recent Americans up to the current day at Grand Ronde and their copious use of native plants. Fight for 15, also tomorrow, National Day of Action at noon, Smith Memorial Union, 1825 Southwest Broadway. Tens of thousands of workers across the country will go on strike tomorrow and take part in the largest day of action for $15 an hour and a union in history. Oregon's minimum wage may be going up, but we all know it's too low and too slow for Portland campus workers at Poverty State University. Can't wait till 2023 for $15. They need it now, so they can pay their tuition, afford housing, and feed their families. Join PSU student workers, janitors, food service workers, child care workers, etc. for $15 on this National Day of Action, sponsored by Portland Jobs for Justice and other groups. That's at Smith Memorial Union tomorrow at noon. There's so much going on. Let me give you one more, and I'll get to the others towards the end of the program. Break Free Celebration and Fundraiser this Friday, 7 to 11 p.m. at the Spare Room Restaurant and Lounge, 4830 Northeast 42nd Avenue in Portland. Dance the night away to the awesome blues and soul band The Get Ahead and other musicians. Donations support the work of mass climate action in the Pacific Northwest the weekend of May 13 to 15. More if you can, less if you can't. There will be a silent auction as well. During the week of May 7 to 15, people all around the world are mobilizing to keep fossil fuels in the ground and create a just transition to 100% renewable energy. In the Pacific Northwest, there will be a mass action at the Shell and Tesoro refineries near Anacortes, Washington. More information at http://breakfreepnw.org. And that's all for now, because we've got a lot to talk about this morning. So let me welcome our guests. Good morning, Aurora.
Good morning, Paul.
And good morning, Orvi.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for wading through those important announcements. There is so much that people are doing to make this change that we are all working for. And I wanted to do this right away after this raucous and fascinating and intense and ultimately disappointing, although I guess most people kind of expected the outcome of the Cascade Locks City Council meeting on Monday, which both of you were at and I was at, and many, many other people were at, both outside and inside, and many people testified. Orvi, let's go right to you. So why were you so concerned that you drove all the way from Warm Springs to go to Cascade Locks City Council meeting?
Well, for me personally, I've had a lot of opportunity to talk with many of my constituents. There's over 5,200 tribal members, and most of them, until I got to the meeting, there was only the one, of course, that called in or sent an email that supported the no vote. But every other person that I talked to supported a yes vote, and they're concerned about the possibility of big business moving in and putting in a bottling plant and kind of infringing on our treaty rights. We have reserved treaty rights to fish in all our usual and accustomed places for fishing, hunting, and gathering. And we've experienced a lot of big business coming in and, you know, pushing their way into the table and taking their seat, and it's at the expense of our treaty rights. And I received a lot of feedback from tribal membership that we need to stand up to this, we need to be a voice, we need to have a seat at the table this time. And so, yes, I definitely said, yes, I will be there, and I'd like to have my voice heard and speak on behalf of the people. So that's why I was there. There was a lot of people there. You know, you guys were there, and you saw how much passion there was in there, people that spoke, and then you could hear the people outside that were there for the protest as well. And, you know, that was 99.5% of the people that I've talked to from Warm Springs have all expressed the same thing, that, yes, we don't want something like this to come in and take over on an area and possibly infringe on our treaty fishing rights. We've, you know, as I expressed at the meeting, there's, you know, salmon is right there at the forefront for us, and something like this could definitely have a negative impact on our most important first foods. So that's why I was there.
And of course, I jumped right into this without actually explaining. I guess I sort of assumed everybody knew what we're talking about here, but I'll let Aurora explain at greater depth, since she's been very deeply involved in this for several months now, a Cascade Locks resident and a member of the Local Water Alliance. Just briefly, the meeting, the main object, almost the only subject of the meeting, was a resolution to basically express the council's Cascade Locks City Council's explicit opposition to ballot measure 1455. And let me let you take it away and explain briefly what ballot measure 1455 is and what the fuss is all about, Aurora.
Sure, thank you. So I so 1455 is what will appear in Hood River County voters' ballot, and so this is for the May ballot. People will be receiving their receiving it on April 26th, and what the ballot will do is essentially prohibit commercial bottling of water. So that means that any water that any bottler who wants to take more than 1,000 gallons a day and just put it in plastic and sell it, and that also includes the exporting of the water out of the county. So, you know,
exporting, you mean, say, by truck to another bottling plant?
Yeah.
Or so? Okay.
Yeah. So, for example, and that was the whole deal in Cascade Locks and why Cascade Locks, the no on 1455 folks and essentially all of the city council people except for Deanna Bustiger, that the Cascade Locks opposition to 1455 said, we want to have control over this in our city. But our argument for yes on 1455 is that this is a countywide issue. I mean, I would say it's more than countywide. It's regional. I mean, it's Oregon. It's every community that's touched by the river. And, you know, we just know how Nestle operates and other water bottlers operate. What they will likely do, and they do this in Colorado in the Denver plant, is they will go after, they'll set up their plant in one location, and they will seek out water sources from up to 100, 120 miles away. So they could very well do that throughout our county. Extract it, put it in a tanker, and then bring it back to their plant and bottle it. And that's why we are very concerned about, Nestle coming into Cascade Locks, because it's not just about Cascade Locks, it's about the county.
And it's not, as you say, just about Nestle. They're the corporation that is sort of the poster child for what's wrong with bottling water across the country, but they're, of course, not the only ones. There's many other companies, including other large corporations like Coca-Cola and smaller operations like Crystal Geyser that wants to move into a town in Northern California. They have several plants already because it's such an incredibly lucrative business. I mean, water is cheaper, should be cheap, and it is to them, and then they sell it more expensively and use a lot of plastic, and so they make massive, massive profits. So, of course, because that's their way of doing business is to go wherever they can and make a profit. But so, but you're careful to mention that, you know, it's not just about Nestle. It's about any company that wants to come in and take the water and essentially privatize it and transport it out of the area.
Yes. And you know, the last time I was on KBOO, you know, I was talking about how the last time I was there, it was when the Story of Stuff video that focused on our campaign to keep Nestle out, how once that movie was released from the Story of Stuff, we got so many emails and phone calls from people all over the country and actually from all over the world. In fact, I'm actually looking at an email right now from someone, from a supporter from Switzerland. Do you mind if I read?
No, please.
Sure. It says, "Dear friends from Oregon," this is shortly after the video was released, "I would like to express my sheer joy after having watched the video by Story of Stuff. I am a Swiss citizen and hold one share of Nestle to raise my voice at the AGM, so the annual general meeting. The water business of Nestle has led me to write a PhD thesis on human rights, environmental and social problems arising with the exploitation for profit by bottling companies. I will study the cases in Maine, Michigan, and others in India and Pakistan to present a legal protection framework that stops companies like Nestle or Coke from their stealing. Please let me know how I can be of help. If you have anything to tell the shareholders on April 7th, I am your man. In the meantime, I wish you all the best. and enjoy your fantastic place. Never give up against these guys.
Well, interesting. April 7th, have you heard back anything that happened at that meeting?
Well, we've been, you know, honestly, we've been so busy with the campaign and just the flurry of emails and phone calls. I did not get a chance to get back to find out what happened. But I do want to say this. I've gotten phone calls from folks over in Bloomfield, Connecticut, from Creston, Montana, a woman from the Mount Shasta area in California, where they effectively, you know, it took 6 years to kick Nestle out over there. And, you know, now Crystal Geyser is going after their water. So this clearly is not about just Nestle. It's really about the corporate water bottlers, as you said, who want to take control over public waters. And that's why I'm so excited. And I think, you know, so many people, not only within our county, but just all over Oregon and the region are in support of our action, because I think this gives people hope. You know, it gives them a tool for really having a say in their community and truly affect change.
And something very striking at the meeting on Monday was the very, very strong Native American presence. There must have been, I don't know, at least 30 or 40 Native people there, mostly from Warm Springs. So it seems like this has really sparked something, Orvie, that, I don't know, have you seen this much, as you said, passion, this much concern expressed for an off-reservation? But that is saying off-reservation is a real, almost a slight, because obviously those are traditional territories, homelands for people who currently live on the Warm Springs and other area reservations. Is this something new? Does this seem new, what's happening with the interest in this issue?
No, I don't think it's new. It's just been, it's been more publicized lately with the increased social media. There's been opposition to a lot of different things coming in, but it just hasn't been publicized as well. There's been a pretty strong showing also at the opposition to the coal terminal and the oil proposed. Increase oil transportation in the Columbia River. And I think the social media has been huge in spreading that word to the other tribal members. And so there's been a lot more more people showing up for these and testifying at these because, like I said, there's been other businesses and other companies that have come in relatively unnoticed or unannounced. And the tribes have realized this and they've had been in opposition of it, but a lot of times we didn't have a seat at the table, we didn't have a voice. But due to recent social media, I heard about this meeting last minute. I didn't hear about it until Sunday, and I decided then I was hoping to get approval from the rest of the tribal council to attend, and I received that on Monday, and so I showed up. So yeah, I think we've showed up at some of these, but it just hasn't been as well publicized until recently with the increased social media.
And maybe it's because of the availability of social media and the fact that there's sort of a new generation of younger folks getting active that are familiar with social media. Maybe that has something to do with it.
Yeah, and I think you could have seen that there with the demographic there. There was a lot more younger people there. There was most of the people there were younger than myself, so... Yeah, I think that is exactly it. There's the social media, especially Facebook. Well, that's the only one that I'm a part of. I'm not a part of the other Twitter or Snapchat or any of those, Instagram. But, yeah, definitely I follow issues on Facebook. I have my own Tribal Council Facebook page where issues such as this are discussed.
Uh-huh. And, you know, Native American reservations are often in areas that are underserved by other forms of communication and are, you know, in over a lot of them have like Warm Springs covers a fairly wide area and people are spread out. So I guess that's probably a good media for people to keep in touch.
Yeah, it's great. Now we have several cell towers and we have our own Warm Springs telco, our own telephone company. And they've been pivotal in putting in a lot of the social media and also extending out the service area for tribal membership. There's still a few areas on the reservation that aren't served, but for the most part, everybody has access to telephones and now the social media. So a lot of them are really tapped into Facebook and other social media pretty well.
Uh-huh. And for anybody who doesn't know, Warm Springs, the Confederated Tribes and Bands of the Warm Springs, our reservation is located east of here on the other side of Mount Hood, down Highway 26. And of course, there's the Kenita Resort, there's a museum, and there's the casino. There's also a very beautiful country out there. And going through to Bend, so anybody who wants to stop by and see Warm Springs, that's where it is. And so the meeting ended up in a 6-1 vote, again, and it wasn't just expressing the council's explicit opposition. There was more than that. It was actually encouraging their own constituents and other voters of Hood River County to vote against. Aurora, does that seems a little odd to me. How about you?
Yeah, and you know, it's funny, but the lawn signs that for the opposition, where it's the no on 1455, it says, "Don't hurt Cascade Locks." And I think that the irony is that this action not only hurts Cascade Locks, but I think it hurts the entire county. So, yeah, it's really unfortunate.
Hello?
Oh, yep.
Okay. Sorry. I thought you
there was a buzzing in my ear, and I wasn't quite sure if I was on the line as well. Sorry.
Yeah, so it was, as I said, it was a very engaged, sometimes very hotly contested. There was some open anger expressed by both local residents and some of the native people there. Obviously, there's long simmering frustrations on the part of the native people who have been largely marginalized and, as Orvi said, left out of important decisions that affect them, although they have gained a fair amount of political power and decision-making ability on issues, especially relating to the Columbia River and the salmon resource, which is what's this is involved in as well. So that's very important that the tribes are getting involved in this. But also long simmering frustration I certainly noticed on the part of some local residents of Cascade Locks. Now, I mean, I don't live there, so I can't really speak to that. But it was pretty obvious there in that meeting. So, and you're a relative newcomer, but I'm sure you've been there long enough to get a sense. I don't know if there's something you want to talk about those conflicts, those tensions within Cascade Locks? Because that's a lot of, it's not just about Nestle, it's about, you know, who gets to make decisions and political control and things like that.
Sure. You know what was, I have to say this, although, you know, there's a lot of tension in the room, something that I think was really valuable that came out of this meeting was really hearing from longtime a combination of longtime residents and, you know, relative newcomers like me, but, you know, people who have grown up with and went to high school with and are neighbors and in fact hunt with, you know, some of the people who are the elected officials. And they made it really clear that they don't have confidence in the local officials who have made these backdoor deals with Nestle. So they certainly expressed their, you know, their opposition to this kind of dealing. But I think what was very refreshing to hear and actually gives me hope is that what they're saying is, hey, you know, we as citizens now have the opportunity to really have a true voice. And it's not just in the hands of, you know, the elected officials who are making those deals. It's the citizens, you know, who get a chance to speak out. And I just thought that some of the longtime residents who did speak out were very respectful and said, hey, we can, in fact, you know, we need to express our concerns. They originally bought the bought the proposal because it sounds, yes, we want some economic development. And I think not only did the residents, I mean, I spoke some of the new business owners who are very concerned about the effect of the trucking and even just being, I think the status of being maybe a pariah town, if Nestle were to come in, it really affects the image of Cascade Locks. And, you know, sadly, I do think it fell on deaf ears, although one of the council members who, in fact, supported this resolution to support or to, you know, to publicly say no on 1455 and encourage voters to do that, he visibly was moved, and I think, I wish he would have abstained. So I hope to see, a change in the way that people speak with each other and engage with each other, and, just to be a lot more thoughtful in the way that they're handling, because, in fact, what the folks who have changed their minds on this issue, people who originally wanted Nestle in and are now very avid supporters of 1455, in support of this ballot measure, they show that it's important to do your homework, and I really wish that our elected officials could do the same and really look beyond, the self-interest of the town and frankly, a lot of the claims about taxes and the jobs. I think are just simply inflated.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of people who say that the evidence bears that out, given other similar examples where corporations like that have come in. That the decision on the Jordan Cove pipeline that FERC denied the request to build this pipeline natural gas, liquefied natural gas terminal in Coos Bay on the basis that the public benefit did not outweigh the potential risks. Of course, they were looking at it in the cold calculus, as most agencies do, of the public benefit, meaning financial benefit to basically the corporations. And I guess they include, the idea of the tax base. But so many towns find is that they end up, a boom, maybe a boom period of 5 years or 10 years, and then devastation afterwards. Hopefully the calculus of what the public benefit means is being expanded by these citizens' actions. I wanted to mention that we are at the halfway point. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. My name is Paul Rowland, and I'm speaking with Aurora Del Valle, who you just heard, with the Local Water Alliance, Cascade Locks residents, and promoter of the 1455 ballot measure, local water protection measure, to basically ban a large-scale commercial water bottling operations in Hood River County. Also speaking with Orvi Dansuka who's a tribal councilman of the Warm Springs Confederated Tribes and Bands of the Warm Springs. And they're both on the phone, so we only have one phone line open. I guess I could have mentioned that at the outset, but it wouldn't have changed anything. But we do have one caller, and the number to call on is 503-231-8187. Let's just go to that first caller. Peter, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks so much for the work that you're doing there to stop Nestle coming in. I've heard you touch on the what they call the public benefit of these projects, and since you were there at the meeting, I wonder what did they tout as the public benefits, and how can we discredit them, because we know that the money is all going to leave the state and go to Switzerland, basically. And I mean, as far as Nestle goes, I'm really interested in cutting them off at the knees about the reasoning that what the public benefit is.
Sure, I'd be happy to address that. I mean, the big claim that for public benefit is that it's really going to help our county's economy and the city's economy and jobs. So the reality check is that, one, Nestle will likely not be paying taxes because of the break that they would get. So they would probably, you know, for the next 3 to 5 years, they wouldn't be paying their taxes. And also, you know, water bottling plants are highly automated. They provide a small number of generally low-paying jobs. And the fact is that Nestle won't commit to offering even one single job to a local. So it's so disturbing. And it's funny because I think we've gained so much support and momentum. They have not only upped the claims that it would bring 50 jobs, you know, to the town, but they're upping it into, now I can't remember, I think it was like 150, or like they're really hiking up the numbers and saying that there are all these other shed jobs. And I just don't think that their numbers pan out. And they still won't disclose real job numbers at their existing plants.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much for the call, Peter. Again, the number is 503-231-8187. Let's go back to Orvie. Are you still with us?
Yes.
Great. So, you know, I was mentioning, you rightly corrected me that this isn't the only issue that the tribes and tribal members have been speaking up about and getting active in. Obviously, there's the extremely worrisome issue of coal and oil trains going right alongside, just within yards of the Columbia River. And we've all seen images of these trains either derailing and exploding or derailing and dumping their coal loads into waterways or onto the ground, eventually getting into the waterways, the blowing of the coal dust, which gets into the water and onto the land. And the tribes have been fundamental in blocking at least one proposed export terminal. As I said, this is something a little different. It's the fact that spring there, it's just that seems to have really sparked something. I was at the rally in Salem a few months ago where traditional Klickitat Cascade chief Johnny Jackson spoke incredibly movingly about the connection, you know, the fact that people lived along that creek and depended upon that, the spring in that creek, for generations and generations, and that there's many more springs that, you know, aren't being made much of yet, but that that ancestral connection, you know, hasn't disappeared. Is that, that obviously must be something that you feel yourself.
Yeah, and that's what's been expressed to me by a lot of my elders. You know, I hear stories about all those areas along there and, you know, how we were displaced by the dam, you know, when the Celilo Falls was flooded. There was a promise that the cities and then also the tribal housing that was displaced by the dam would be replaced. Well, some of those cities have been replaced and some of those homes have been replaced, but the tribe hasn't received that. Recently, we had Earl Blumenauer and Merkley. They both came in to our In Lucite and the Dalles to talk about that, and they're trying to seek out funding for that housing. But a lot of those folks are the same folks that talk about all these areas and how we've been consistently encroached upon by business and by, you know, by even private citizens, by purchasing homes there and then blocking access to some of our fishing sites that we were guaranteed access to. So we're battling with that, but also all this connection to the land of, these are areas where our families gathered, you know, during certain times of the year. You know, some of them lived there year-round and others, you know, went there seasonally. We followed the food cycles, and like I said, salmon was one of the biggest staple food for our people. And so, yeah, we have a lot of areas, and we've seen that diminish over the years. And so, yes, it's of concern, and I think that's why it's gotten a lot more vocal now amongst our people, is because we've seen that and relatively little has been done about it. And even, like I said, with our housing that was supposed to be replaced, it still hasn't been placed, and it's been over 50 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And so you know, I'm glad that Merkley and Blumenauer are stepping up and they're seeking out funding to get that done. And, you know, I hope to see that soon. And our people are, that would be a big spark to our people to see something like that finally coming to fruition.
Well, you know, speaking of the fishing sites, some of the most, it was just so beautiful to see so many tribal council members step up and testify before the city council. I'm not sure they were expecting that much, but some of the most powerful testimony regarded specifically the fact that tribal members are a regular presence in that town. They have been for decades since white people have been around and interacted with them, but obviously generations and generations before that. But, you know, that's and they mentioned that that's an important, you know, economic generator for the town and draws tourists as well. And I don't know how many people know that there is a fishing access point there right in Cascade Locks. And people spoke very movingly about how important that is to, you know, people to come down from Warm Springs or from Umatilla or from Yakima and fish there.
Yeah, and we definitely, you know, as I mentioned in my testimony the other night, we understand the need for jobs. We are a reservation that's in poverty. We have over 70% unemployment. So we understand the need for jobs and for a new spring of new economic development ventures. And, you know, we've had a few of them that came to our people and failed. And, you know, one of those was modeling on the reservation. And our people said no. We said, nope, we're not going to do it. But one of our teachings of our elders is that if you start selling your resources, then they go away. And so that's one thing that we said no. We have some of the best water, drinking water supply in the state of Oregon. And we said no to that, even though we realized that there could have been possible economic possible jobs. There could have been some jobs for some locals, but, you know, overwhelmingly our people said, no, we don't want that. We'll have to look at something else. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we definitely understand that. So I can sympathize with the folks that are there that are seeking employment, that want, this is their home. They've been living there for, you know, for a certain amount of time. There's been people there that talked about being there for 40 plus years. So I can understand their need for jobs, and I definitely sympathize with that because we're in that same situation here. However, we've said no to water bottling plant here, and you know, hopefully that's something that we're still opposed to here, and we oppose it there because of the possible infringement on our treaty fishing and the effects that it could have.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk to you a little more about overall tribal opposition, if that's something you can talk about. I know the Umatillas have come out against it. I've heard there's the possibility that maybe the Yakimas are talking about it as well. Maybe that's something you can address. But right now we have first I want to let you people know what's coming up this morning on KBOO. Before we go to our next caller, John, you'll be up in a minute. At 9 on Political Perspectives, we hear Green Sex or Hot World. Interesting. Should anyone add another child to a warming world? We get two points of view from women who write about it, Madeline Ostrander and Alicia Graves. Also, Dr. Marcus Donat talks about how extreme rainfall events and extreme drought will worsen as the planet warms. And as always, thank all you KBOO members out there for your oh-so-needed and appreciated support to the station. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate. And mentioning our website, dun-da-da, as everybody know, we got our new website up and running. Go check it out. For those of you who use computers and the Internet, it's not obligatory, and I can understand that people might not want to. But if you do, go check out our new website. It's a thing of beauty, and I think it's a lot more user-friendly than our previous one. So hopefully that will be a boon and a benefit to our station and to all those who want to interact with us. With that, let's go to John, our next caller. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning, Paul. Thank you for addressing the issue. I'd like to tie this in with the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is that the global trade agreement that they're attempting to get passed. So in challenging Nestle in preventing them from being able to have the bottling plant, if the TPP were to go through, Nestle would be able to go to through the legal mechanisms of the TPP, which are outside of the judicial system of the United States, and say, we've lost anticipated revenue because the state of Oregon has not allowed us to make our bottling plant in Oregon. And then Oregon could be sued and be forced to pay the anticipated loss of profits. There's a couple of things that for me, myself personally, that go along with this. One is it's the loss of sovereignty for the state of Oregon and for the United States of America itself. The second thing is that there's the unfettered capitalism. I don't have a problem with capitalism, which is in a harness that prevents its worst aspects from manifesting in such dire and disastrous ways. But unfettered capitalism, everything is rendered into a profit center, and nothing is sacred. And as somebody who's lived in Oregon for a long time, I actually experienced the environment itself as a manifestation of the sacred and the divine here. And I believe that that's what we need to step up in order to protect from the rapacious greed of the oligarchs. So I just wanted to mention, for anybody who's concerned with the Nestle issue, you should also be concerned with the Trans-Pacific Partnership, because that would be something that would make confronting Nestle even more difficult than it is at present. Thank you so much for addressing the topic.
Okay, and thank you, John. And we are at 8:43 in the morning, so anybody else wants to call, we only have one line available because we have both our guests on the phone. Number is 503-231-8187. I just can't resist saying that the idea of fettered capitalism, I don't know, it seems like an oxymoron. I believe what the capitalist system does is it continually breaks all fetters that are attempt to be placed on it. And maybe there's periods where it can be fettered, but if the profit margin slips below a certain rate, it steps in and reasserts its true brutal face. And along with that, I think the point is completely well taken. We have spoken a lot about the Trans-Pacific Partnership here on KBOO, but we've also talked about the fact that the TPP and things, free trade agreements like that, are basically, if you talk, the community rights analysis, is that they're basically based upon the Commerce Clause of the Constitution, which is enshrined in the Constitution itself, which was basically the first free trade agreement between the original 13 colonies, 13 states, as it were. In fact, that leads to the possibility that Nestle would actually sue, if should this ballot measure 1455 go through, could sue say that they have no right, the state must step in because the local jurisdiction, local municipalities do not have ultimate jurisdiction over these questions, which has happened time and again. So, Aurora, let's get back to the what's been happening recently. We really haven't talked about. I know there's been some counter moves by Nestle. There's been a lot of local businesses in Hood River County that have stepped up and expressed support for 1455. I believe. I'm not sure if Nestle has started a PAC yet to oppose the ballot measure. There was some talk at the Cascade Lock City Council meeting on Monday that it's seemingly been already some funding coming in for some mailings that have been made, but there's been nothing expressly declared. Talk a little bit about how the battle lines are being drawn in this issue right now.
Yeah, so we've been working hard on this ballot measure since we started gathering signatures back in the fall. And so just pretty recently, there's a Nestle front group. So two Cascade Locks residents are the local face of the Nestle's effort. But really, they're being they have the funds, even though they haven't. For the life of me, I don't know how they can pay them, but they have hired a very expensive Salem lobbyist, to really shepherd this campaign. All of the county voters, including myself, we received this very slick mailer from this group in opposition to the measure, and I'm wondering how they paid for it. And, one of the things I encourage all journalists around, I really want people I would love for our local media to follow the money and really look into, you know, what is disturbing to me. If you look at the campaign financing for both RPAC and also the, it's called the Coalition for a Strong Gorge Economy. These are the no on 1455. There just seems to be a disconnect as to how much money they've spent, not only on the mailers. They did an initial polling where it was very expensive. They paid for for this poll that went out to, it was like a 20-minute, very involved poll from a Portland marketing firm where they contacted voters and I think really confused them. It was a lengthy 20-minute survey, and that was never reported. So this was even before the Coalition for a Strong Gorge Economy even existed. So I just encourage citizens to look that up on Orastar, and for journalists to really dig things up and follow the money, because we just know how is it possible for this group to be able to fund this, the expensive mailer, including the advertisement and the future advertisements. And one thing I want to mention is that we are a total grassroots, all volunteer campaign, and we really need the help from the community. So I do want to just mention our website, localwateralliance.org. That's localwateralliance.org. We're also on Facebook, if people can check us out there, like us, and really, kind of keep track of what's going on. I think that would be really helpful.
Okay, yeah. This is going to just heat up as we go into it's May 17th will be the vote. But as you said, the ballots will reach people, some of whom are within terrestrial earshot of my voice right now through our translator in Hood River. And we do like to encourage our Gorge listeners to stay involved and get engaged with KBOO to, support us however you can, to give us tips on what's going on out there, to call in on these shows, et cetera. I did want to talk a little more about the campaign and how it's going, but let's go to our next caller. David, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. I was going to give your guest a heads up. I personally think that Nestle's is basically like organized crime, and they have a pattern and practice of thieving the resources. And so if you go to Michigan, in the northwest section of Michigan, they're, if I remember right, they're pumping 600 gallons a second. It might be 600 gallons a minute, but they have pulled so much water out of that area that lakes 25 miles away have dried up. And so I would think that they're, if you had normal, like water rights for a certain amount of acreage, you're not supposed to be taking your neighbors, but that's basically what's been going on with them. And so I would, look for some alliances with up in Michigan, because if I remember right, that was specifically Nestle's that was doing that. The other thing I was going to raise was the previous caller had talked about the TPP, And this is it's very good to get people involved in stopping that horrible thing, because it's not just a sovereignty issue, it's basically a laws of physics issue. And it's as if the laws of physics can be defied by some corporation, so that they get the right to pull more water than there exists, and if they can't pull more than that, then they can bill the state for not allowing them to drill more than there was to begin with. So it's kind of I even wonder, you know, the whole Tower of Babel kind of paradigm, where they built an economy to the sky, is the way I look at it, and that they demanded an infinite economy when they were in a finite world.
Well, it's a pyramid scheme. They continually have to exploit into the future to pay.
Right. That's another angle of the same thing. And so the financing of it, the interest rates on the laws of physics, and in fact, it's kind of convoluted, but if you were to look at the laws of physics, there's, for every action, there's a separate and equal reaction. But the laws of economics say that for every action, there's a separate reaction plus profit.
Well, yeah, you can eat your cake and have it too, as they say.
Yeah, but some angles on that.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for that call. We are winding down. I appreciate that call. If anybody else wants to call in, we might have time for one more. 503-231-8187. A lot of good points have been brought up. Orvi, I want to get back to you, our tribal councilman from Warm Springs. There were two current and one recently elected tribal council people there at the meeting on Monday. Is that right?
Yes.
Yes, which is really encouraging that there's so much support. I mentioned, you know, the possibility of a wider tribal support, but the issue of sovereignty was brought up. Of course, there's many layers of sovereignty, and that word means a lot to indigenous people, to the native tribes, tribal interests on the Columbia River are very strong, and also the issue of water rights was brought up. And of course, Native people really have senior water rights, as it were. You want to talk a little bit about, you know, what the tribes are working on in terms of any legal strategies or any other angles on this issue?
There hasn't been any discussion at the table yet, because we're waiting to see. We obviously are keeping close track of what's happening there. So there hasn't been any formal discussion about it. There's been sidebar discussions on what should happen, and you know, I don't think I should talk about that at this point, because it hasn't been formalized at the table at the tribal council level. The tribal council has sent letters in opposition to this, so yes, the entire tribal council did, even though there was two out of 11 from the current table were there. We were delegated by the rest of the tribal council that day to attend. So yes, there is the formal opposition, but yeah, I don't think I'm at liberty right now to speak of any type of legal actions, because, you know, if what they're saying is true, you know, what they voted on the other night was to discuss it and explore it. So I can't say for sure what will happen after that. But definitely there is a lot of tribal opposition to it. The other tribes that, you know, their tribal council was able to attend, but I have been in contact with a couple of them, and they're definitely in opposition to it, and they're definitely alarmed by it. But they were in their own tribal council meetings they were in, so they couldn't take off and make it there. But, you know, we've gotten support from them on the side saying, yes, we're definitely opposed to it. The four three tribes of the Columbia River and the Tribal Fish Commission, which is Warm Springs, Yakima, Nez Perce, and Umatilla. So there's Warm Springs and Umatilla presence at the meeting, but there was others that, you know, called from Yakima that said, we can't be there because we're holding our meeting. The chairman wanted to be there, but he was busy chairing the meeting, so they couldn't be there, but they're still in opposition, and yeah, there hasn't been any formal discussions yet on any legal actions.
Well, I hope you all keep KBOO in mind for any further developments
I appreciate you hosting this discussion. I think this is really good, and it's helpful to get that the word out to the rest of the state, because as was mentioned the other night, you know, water is going to be the next gold rush. Everybody's clamoring for water, and you know, it's only going to get worse as we're in these droughts. I heard last year that we were in the third year of a 30-year drought, and so water rights are going to take front and center. They're going to be front and center. And, you know, as a tribe and having senior water rights, we definitely want to have that discussion and make sure that there's enough water in there to keep one of our first foods, you know, keeping their habitat suitable for them to continue coming back.
Well, hopefully I'll be able to get some people from a Intertribal Fish Commission or some of the experts from the tribes on the salmon issue to get a clearer sense. We haven't really had a chance to go deeply into that, of the particular impacts that people envision from drawing off so much of the water from Oxbow Springs, because people, you know, last night, I don't know if there are people with that Coalition for a Strong Gorge Economy or who they were. There are some local residents who are against the 1455 water protection measure that said that, oh, the water from, or maybe it was one of the city councilmen or the mayor, that the water from that would be replaced by the city water, apparently, if that goes through. I'm not sure where that's at. It's a whole other question we won't be able to get into. But I'd like to explore some of those more technical questions of the impact on the salmon fishery. At this point, we only have a couple minutes left. We have another caller. I don't know if, Billy, you have a really quick question you'd be able to get in there. Otherwise, we need to kind of wrap up.
A quick comment, actually. Listening to this, it's like, what's to stop a foreign national government from merely coming in and buying water rights and opting to export water to their own nation, as we export oil from other nations, and merely starving communities of... So my point is that when corporations' water rights trump those of the community, what's to stop Nestle from exporting water to another nation if they're willing to pay more for it? And I don't think that's unrealistic.
No. Well, that's a good question to end our calls on. Thank you so much for calling. Aurora, last word. What's next? What should people keep their eye on and be concerned about?
Yeah, well, I really encourage listeners, you know, even if you don't live in the Gorge or in Hood River County, to please check out our website, localwateralliance.org, to take a look at the measure. You know, my hope is that we will set the precedent that as a community, that we won't trade away our water supply for just a few low-paying jobs. And I was just so moved by just the show of support from the tribal people coming out. They spoke so eloquently, and you know, all of the folks, the local people. I just want to say this, that out of the speakers who testified, all of those folks, with except for at the very end, were either tribal people, but a lot of Cascade Locks residents.
Okay,
so
we got to run.
I just want to say that the city. The city of Cascade Locks is not representative of the people.
All right. On that note, that's it for today. Thank you so much, Orvi Danzuka from Warm Springs. And thank you much, Aurora Del Val from Cascade Locks. We got to wrap it up. Stay tuned for more great programming here on KBOO.
Work collectively. There just might be something we can do, and everything can change.